everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on Bubblequake when we come back. Hey, are you concerned about your privacy? Well, how much does your government know about you anyway, and how much do you want your government to know about you? Well, government only knows as much about you as you tell them about yourself, and that's because everything the government, industry, or business knows about you is because you told them. That's right. Right out of your own mouth, you told them. Now, the Fourth Amendment protects you in your person, houses, papers, and effects, but it doesn't protect you from yourself. Now, can we have privacy in the computer age? Well, you bet we can. And that's because information is gathered and stored in a very reasoned and logical manner for later retrieval and use. It's knowing how this information is gathered and what information is being stored and what information you want to keep personal and private is what puts you in the driver's seat in your quest for privacy. Now, always keep in mind that no one knows anything about you that you haven't revealed by your own hand or by your own mouth. Now, if you'd like to learn more about privacy and privacy issues, then why don't you call us here at the law school and ask for our free general law CD package. It's a four-hour program. It's entertaining, informative, educational, and best of all, it's free of charge. Just call the school at area code 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Click onto the email machine and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Once more, georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're reviewing the book, America's Bubble Economy. And in Chapter 7, it's entitled Survive and Thrive. It's not just a matter of can we survive this, but can we actually make money off of it? And the answer to that is yes, we can. And he starts off by telling us that the fall of America's bubble economy will shake up many industries and drive businesses into bankruptcy, derail countless careers, and force dramatic numbers of workers into temporary unemployment. It'll also create thousands of successful companies that don't currently exist. It'll lead all sorts of people to rethink their life's work and make many, many alert entrepreneurs and investors fabulously wealthy. Now, depending upon how well you face the facts and then reposition yourself the next couple of years, you would be in for a rude awakening, a sleepy downturn, or slowdown, or dream come true prosperity. It's a choice that we all have to make. And despite the widespread problems that most U.S. businesses and workers are going to face, there are real opportunities for tremendous financial success for those who, by fate or by forethought, happen to end up in the right place at the right time. So later in this chapter, I'm going to show you a few ways that you can join them. But first, we need to deliver the bad news before it catches us all off guard. Now, this isn't your daddy's economic slowdown. We're not talking about a replay of the 1970s. It'll be a replay of the 1930s. So this isn't the 1970s that we tend to think of when we think of life in an economic slowdown. A recession is not what we're about to get. This is going to be one of the bigger, badder, deeper, and longer than what we've seen before type recessions. We like to use the word recession now because depression is, well, it's depressing. But depression is much worse than recession, and that's what we're headed for. And to understand why, we need to take a closer look at three important sectors of our economy. First of all, let's look at the capital goods sector. Capital goods includes things like automobiles and construction, major industrial equipment, Caterpillar tractors, and so on. Second comes discretionary spending. Discretionary spending includes things like restaurants and entertainment, travel, discretionary consumer goods like DoorDash. And then we get to the necessities sector, food, clothing, shelter, energy, government services, healthcare. And typically, in an economic downturn, such as the recession of the 1970s, we can expect the capital goods sector to slow significantly, and the discretionary spending sector to decline somewhat, and the necessities sector to mostly be spared, well, at least under normal conditions. By this point, you're probably guessing that conditions during and after the bubble's collapse are anything but normal. Now, if you hope your business survives and thrives in the coming bubble quake, or if you'd like to keep your current job, or just gear up for an even better job, then the following insights may shed some light on what you should expect in each of these three economic sectors. So keep in mind, there are three sectors in the economy: capital goods, discretionary income, and then necessities. We all participate in these three sectors of the economy. During the 1930s, during the 1970s, whenever there's a depression or a recession, each and every one of us reacted to it, or we will react to it. And it's pretty predictable. What happened in the past is probably a pretty good indicator as to what's going to happen again in the future. So typically, in an economic downturn such as the recession of the 70s, then, we could expect the capital goods sector to slow significantly. For more details about major industries within each economic sector, then we have a website at americasbubbleeconomy.com. Let's take a look at capital goods, things like automobile production, construction, major industrial equipment. When we get to super high interest rates at 20, 30, 40%, coupled with a big economic slowdown, this will be very bad news for capital goods. And as we discussed earlier, our huge accumulation of government debt, plus our other foreign and domestic debt, is going to drive up interest rates to unprecedented levels when these bubbles pop. High interest rates will make borrowing money for expensive, or very expensive, for individuals, and more importantly, it'll be too expensive for business. High interest rates will be nothing short of an unmitigated disaster for the capital goods sector, which depends upon customers and consumers having access to low-cost capital. And high interest rates will make recovery after the bubble far longer and much more difficult than in previous recessions. Think about the logic behind that. Let's suppose that you want to go out and buy a new car. Today, automakers are competing for low-cost loans, 5%, 6%, 3%. In many cases, when they're selling furniture and things, they'll advertise no interest for a year. Now, think about interest rates like they were back in 1979, 80, 81, 82, or interest rates as we just saw in Argentina in 2002, 3, and 4. Interest rates of 20, 30, 40%. Now, let's go down and buy an automobile. The automobile, let's say, is $30,000 and the interest rate is 20 or 30%. How many people are going to go down and buy a car for $30,000 at 20% interest? Now, during the last big recession at the end of the 70s and beginning with the Reagan administration when interest rates hit 20%, housing just stopped. And I was in Boise, Idaho at the time, and you could have bought every house in Boise, at least every house that was on the market, for no money down. Interest rates at 20%. Banks were cutting all kinds of fabulous deals for cash. Cash, C-A-S-H. Nothing was for sale on time. Interest rates at 20%, nobody could afford it. Now, it's true, there were some people out there buying, and there were some people that signed contracts at 20%, but boy, I'm telling you, they were few and far between. So if you're in construction, you can expect to take a big hit. And one of the points that he makes here in the book on the bubble economy, let's suppose that you're a carpenter, plumber, an electrician, or an electrician, and you're working in new construction. New construction is going to stop. And when it stops, your job stops. Now's the time to pre-position yourself so that when this occurs, you've got something to fall back on. What are you going to do when there's no more new construction? You need to be thinking about that now because it's coming. It's been here before. It's upon us now, and it's going to happen again at some point in the future. Nobody's going to learn from this depression any more than we learned from the last depression. Now, I'm speaking of masses of people. There's always a few people, you know, that pay attention and learn from history. Most people don't. Now, how will businesses fare in capital goods? Well, we won't dress it up for you. The bottom line for business owners in the capital goods sector isn't very pretty. So if you can sell your business now, think about selling your business now because now's the time to do it. Get out of your business and get liquid. Put the cash in your pocket. No one can predict exactly when the bubble quake is going to hit, but even if it takes another 5 years, the marketplace for your business is very unlikely to improve over the next 5 years over what it is today, if at all. Prices for businesses are pretty good right now, and they aren't going to get significantly better anytime soon. In fact, the values of capital goods sector companies will decrease substantially as we get closer to the final fall. So if you have a business in the automotive, construction, industrial equipment, or any other capital goods industry, the longer you wait to get out, the more vulnerable you're going to be to significant loss. Given that we don't expect the bubbles to pop for another year or two, you could use that time to improve your company so that you can sell it for the best possible price. And if you're planning to sell your company in 5 years, you might want to move up your time frame. If you're planning to sell in 10 years, you definitely need to move up your time frame. Now, what are you going to do after you sell? Well, your options include using your proceeds to invest in the huge wealth-building opportunities that we discussed in chapters 5 and 6, or to buy or set up another business that is much better positioned to survive and flourish in this post-bubble economy. For some possibilities, they're discussed later in this chapter. Now, your job prospects in the capital goods sector. So, mainly economists, if you stop and think about it now for a minute, you know, mainly economists think in terms of Warren Buffett and Bill Gates, the big money investors, people that have millions of dollars and invest in stocks and bonds, and they have businesses. But this guy takes a look at, well, what does Joe Sixpack and Sally Housewife do? You know, if you're a waitress and you're working down at the Olive Garden, maybe you've been there at the restaurant for a number of years, and this is a job that you know and a job that you do and a job that you make pretty good money at. How is that job going to fare when we have distressed economic times? The answer is it's not going to fare very well. And that's because people who are on unemployment insurance don't eat out as much. People whose unemployment insurance has run out and they're living with relatives or hand to mouth, they're not eating out in the restaurants. Now today, you know, there's plenty of money, discretionary income. People are going to eat out. There's always going to be rich people. There's always going to be people that have money. And those people have places that they're going to go eat. Now, if you're a Bill Gates or a Warren Buffett, you probably aren't going to miss a meal for the rest of your life, you know, people with billions of dollars. And furthermore, these people are positioning themselves today. I've mentioned this before. Let me mention it again. Today, 167 executives were interviewed. And for every stock they're buying, they're selling 68. So they're in a net selling mode. Business executives in the know, chairmen of the board, you know, people that are sitting on boards of directors, they're not even buying stocks in their own companies. They know what's coming. So why doesn't Sally Housewife and Joe Sixpack know? You know, you'd think our government, our government leaders, you know, would at least clue us in. These are people who know what's coming and are positioning themselves for the fall, but they don't say a word to the rest of us out here in society, so that when it overtakes us, it'll overtake us like a thief in the night. We'll just wake up one morning and it'll just be a total shock. So let's start thinking about ourselves for a change. Now, as hard as it may be to sell your business, it can be even harder to quit your job and train for another job or another career. So unlike selling a business, which at least provides the possibility of getting some cash, when you quit your job, it usually means walking away cold turkey from your paycheck. And in the capital goods sector of the economy, that paycheck may be a bit better than jobs elsewhere in the economy. And so we're fully aware that you may have no interest in leaving a lucrative job today in the capital goods sector in order to take what may be a lower paying position. But still, you may as well know the cold hard facts. Jobs in the capital goods industries will be the worst hit by the coming bubble quake, and there isn't much that you can do to protect yourself other than to gear up and move on. And your best bet may be to rethink your career, and rethink your career with an eye toward joining an industry that will do far better when the bubbles burst. If a major career makeover is not your style, you may want to consider making a move to a more stable area within your current industry. For example, if you work in the construction industry, which will take a truly terrible hit, you may find that moving into repair-oriented work rather than new construction will keep you busy while others sit at home. And of course, many construction workers will also get this idea after the bubbles pop. So the sooner you begin and position yourself, your transition is going to be much better. Learning vehicle repair will also keep you employed, as will retraining for a job in the other sectors of the economy that are also going to be hit, but not hit as hard as capital goods. Now let's take a look at discretionary spending, you know, such as travel, restaurants, carnival cruises, entertainment. Well, as you might guess, when the going gets tough, Americans are simply not going to run out to the mall every night after work, if they have any work, and then squander what limited cash that they have and very limited credit on any more of these high-priced designer handbags from Gucci or the latest CD. Discretionary spending is just that. It's discretionary. And many items and activities that we currently enjoy today will simply be off of our shopping lists after the bubbles pop. And this will certainly slow many businesses to a crawl and force others completely out of the game. The impact of the coming bubble quake won't rock the discretionary spending sector of the economy as much as it will capital goods. Here's why. Some people will still have money, and these people will still keep on spending their money. But they're going to be spending that money at a lower level than they are today. So instead of discretionary spending disappearing totally, people are going to simply buy lower priced discretionary items. Steak restaurants, for example. Once the bubbles pop, there's going to be far fewer people and businesses who are going to have the money to spend on eating out. And that's certainly going to affect all of the restaurants. But there will still be some people and businesses that do have money and will be very happy to go to the restaurants, as long as they don't have to spend as much as they used to. So the restaurant industry will continue to be a huge industry in the United States, but businesses are going to shift dramatically toward the lower end. And to a large extent, the exact same thing will happen throughout the discretionary spending sector. Instead of brand names, we'll be buying bargains, and we will still buy stuff that we don't absolutely have to have, and we'll just buy less of it and at lower prices. Now, I'm going to put in an editorial comment here. I've talked to wealthy people and poor people alike concerning the subject matter, and what we discussed was the spending habits of people and how people react to these depressions. And back during the Great Depression of the 1930s, while 25% of people were unemployed, it's important to remember that 75% of people were employed. Now, when you have 75% of the people working, it is true that there is a slowdown in the economy. It slows to a crawl. Wealthy people are still wealthy. And Henry Ford, in 1930, made $30 million that year. In fact, it was a big war cry to the unemployed. Henry Ford made $30 million, and he, along with the other aristocrats, are opposed to Social Security and workmen's compensation and unemployment insurance. Because the New Deal made a big deal out of Henry Ford's wealth and how much money he was making even during the Depression years. Now think about this. Honest to God, do you think that Henry Ford, making $30 million a year in 1930, 34, 35, 37, 39, do you think he's going to take any hit in his standard of living? Do you think he's going to stop going to the restaurants because the economy is bad? Because instead of making $60 million a year, he's only making 30? Or a guy that was making $30 million a year, but now he's only making 15, he's going to stop going to the restaurants? Well, as I speak, we're coming off of the Christmas season, and while Walmart did very poorly, they had a gain, but it was a very poor gain. And a lot of businesses during the Christmas season posted gains of 5 or 6%. The stores that scored the biggest percentage growth this Christmas were the high-end stores, the Neiman Marcus, the Macy's. So there's going to be two camps. You've got the poor people who are out of the game. You've got the middle-class people who are still in the game, but not in the game at the same level. And then you've got the rich people who, like Bill Gates, will take a hit. Instead of having $37 billion, he'll only have $15 billion. But it isn't going to affect his lifestyle. So rich people will still have money, and they'll still be spending. And that's where you want to be positioned. You want to be positioned where the wealthy people are. Now let me give you another little piece. I lived through the 1970s. It was a big recessionary period. And I was in the contracting business, and that's called capital goods. But I positioned myself in a unique category or a unique position in capital goods or construction in that I was involved in renovation and repair. And while other people were unemployed or other people were scrambling in the construction industry, I was thriving. And that's because during the 1970s, plumbers and plumbing shops were getting $25 an hour. So I was in the repair business at $12 an hour, half price. So people would call me to come out and repair their toilets and clear their drains and do the jobs at half price rather than call the plumbing company to come out and repair it or to come out and build it. So while plumbing companies were cut way back, plumbing companies that might have 15 guys working in 1968, and by 1973 and 4, they might have two or three plumbers working, still charging $25 an hour, but they didn't have but maybe one-tenth or 25% of the staff or the crew. And when I started in 1968, I started by myself. By 1974, I had 14 employees and 7 service trucks doing repair work rather than new construction. So tuck that one away in your hearts. I lived through it, and it worked like a shot. I not only survived the recession of the 1970s, it was the biggest growth period in my business. 1968, 69, 70, 71 were all good. 72, 73, 74, 75, while other people were hurting, I was growing faster and doing even better than I did when I first started. So the big surprise about this current U.S. economy is just how wealthy we really are in the United States. We routinely spend huge amounts of money and credit on things that we really don't need. And so a whole lot more of our current economy is in the discretionary spending sector than has ever been seen before. And that means that once incomes and credit cards are in short supply, or in shorter supply, a much greater percentage of the U.S. economy is going to feel the pain than ever before. And there's an entirely new situation for us. Back in the 1920s, when the nation was much less wealthy heading into the Great Depression, discretionary spending represented a much smaller portion of our overall economy. So when the stock market bubble crashed in 1929 and the economy took a major downturn, the large dip in discretionary spending had less impact on the economy as a whole because it just didn't make up that larger part of the economy to start with. Other industries took a big hit, but people still had to eat. So the basic things, such as food, and they had to buy basic clothing. So most of these industries just kept on going. A very different situation exists today because so much of what we currently buy and what keeps our economy going, we can easily do without. And we may not like foregoing a trip to the Whole Foods store or Wegmans, there where we can select from a huge range of expensive goodies. But if we have to, when the rubber meets the road, we certainly can and we will survive on cheaper foods from low-priced stores. And we may not like to skip the latest high-priced fashions, but if we have to, we can easily shop at lower level and discount and thrift stores. We can also survive quite nicely without those $100,000 kitchens and bathroom makeovers, complete with granite countertops and stainless steel appliances. And once incomes and assets begin to evaporate, and we need to conserve cash, Americans will very quickly, although not very happily, but very quickly learn to manage without these pricey pleasures. And of course, if spending on lavish food, clothing, and housing can easily be cut, and if this kind of spending represents a big chunk of America's current economy, then the impact of these changes will be very, very negative indeed. And while the discretionary spending sector will be hit less hard than the capital goods sector, the fact that discretionary spending has become such a big part of the current U.S. economy, it means a downturn in this sector will greatly accelerate and deepen the bubble quake as well as slow our post-bubble recovery. Let me make a comment here. I was in the Bay Area during the 1970s. I moved in 1972 up to Boise, Idaho. Boise, Idaho is the state's capital. And the tax money flows in from around the state to Boise and pays the bureaucrats working in the government. So in communities where you find government or colleges and institutions, you'll find that there's going to be less of a downturn in the economy than in those areas like Detroit, Michigan, which are factory towns and rely upon those capital goods sector industries. So tuck it away in your heart. Next week I'm going to do a program or a series of programs on strategic relocation. If you live in Detroit, Michigan, you need to relocate. You need to move out of Detroit and move to someplace like Springfield, Missouri, which has a diversified economy. It isn't dependent upon a steel mill, or it isn't dependent upon one or two particular industries that everybody relies upon to bring the money into the city, like Detroit and automobiles. There are a lot of Springfields around the country. And then a lot of people from Michigan have strategically relocated themselves to other locations that are more lucrative, such as Wyoming, which is enjoying a huge energy boom, or to Alberta up in Canada, which is going through a huge energy boom. And while energy may take a hit, we still have to have gasoline, kids. And while all industries are going to have a slowdown, some industries are actually going to have a speed up rather than a slowdown. Remember, we're reviewing the book on the America's Bubble Economy, written by David Wiedemeyer, or Wiedemeyer, spelled W-I-E-D-E-M-E-R. Really a dynamite book. It's about a 1 in 20 book. There's other economics books out there. This guy isn't the only guy in the country, you know, writing a book on business and business cycles. But I'm reporting on this one because it's a good one. And it's aimed at, not primarily, but at least it's aimed at those of us at the lower end of the scale. That's why I selected this guy, because he's talking about the Joe Sixpacks and the blue-collar workers and the waitresses and the business women. You know, you women, if you're in a business out here somewhere, and let's suppose that you're operating your own business, you know, maybe fabrics or something like that. You know, if you use your head and you pre-position yourself today, there's going to be a big boom later in people, that is, other women, buying fabric, for instance, and making dresses as opposed to going out and buying expensive dresses. And if you're in the used business, you just watch how these thrift stores, which during boom times lag behind, but when there's a shortage of money, the used and the thrift businesses thrive and boom. Hang on, I got to give you a reminder here that you're listening to The Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States and worldwide over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. And the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, please go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated weekly for our radio logs and schedule and archives, and that can be accessed through the website as well. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the Law School at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. And we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give don't mean that those authors or publications that we endorse and recommend are necessarily going to reciprocate. Most of these authors and publications cited here on the Law Hour are political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans. whose viewpoint is not necessarily totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone, and they don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of our advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network or local radio station. And if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, remember our website is georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. And if you know where I can get some Indian black salve, I would appreciate it if you'd call me here at the law school and give me a source. And one more reminder, we're offering a new class on health and healing, which covers the alternative methods being used for the treatment and healing of such things as cancer, commonly known in the Bible as the botch of Egypt, which now affects about 50% of Americans, at least at some point in their life, and how to prevent these degenerative diseases and use the application of essential oils, supernutritional foods, and such things as acupressure application and training so you can find the pressure points and contribute to your ongoing good health. This class will be coming on February the 5th through the 9th here in Isabel. So if you're interested, call us here at the law school. The number to call, 417-273-4967. And one more thing here I needed to bring to your attention. Oh, yeah, Austin, Texas, February 26th through March 2nd. We're planning on doing a tax school down there, live and direct in Austin, Texas. If you want more information, call us here at the law school for you down in the Austin, Texas area, February 26th through March 2nd. Number to call, 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about the coming bubble quake. I'm going to give this guy a little plug here for his book. The reason I'm recommending the book is because it's written for blue-collar workers. I wouldn't say written for, but it includes blue-collar. The little guys, like us truck drivers down here at the bottom of the pile. What are we going to do when this thing hits? How can we pre-position ourselves before the event transpires? It's called the America's Bubble Economy is the title of the book, Profit When It Pops. The author's name is David Weidemeyer, W-I-E-D-E-M-E-R. I'd call it Weidemeyer or Weidemar, except for that E in there after the D, so I'm going to, at the risk of offending this guy, call him Weidemeyer, W-I-E-D-E-M-E-R, David, America's Bubble Economy, published by Wiley. It came from Barnes & Noble. It's probably $25, well worth the $25. Don't be afraid of spending the $25 or so because it's got a ton of information and neat ideas that I can't relate in total here on the air. Now, we've already mentioned how a slowdown in the discretionary spending sector harms many businesses in the fancy food or the high-end clothing, fine dining, and home improvement industries. The travel industry will take an even greater hit, and leisure travel will be in very bad condition. And travel overseas will face a double whammy as the buying power of the dollar falls. Business travel will suffer as well because of the high costs and low value of the dollar. And only the most important overseas business travel is going to occur at all. With our imports way down and our exports low due to the major recession around the world, there simply won't be as much need for business and overseas travel. Domestic business travel will also decrease due to the sharp downturn in the economy and the cost-cutting mindset that most companies will be forced to adopt. And domestic leisure travel to major entertainment destinations such as Orlando and Disneyland, Disney World, and Carnival Cruises, and Las Vegas, and Atlantic City, and the Boardwalk, all of these neat places to go will be seriously stalled, while more Americans go someplace closer and cheaper, like into their living rooms to watch TV, for example. Businesses that survive during these leaner days will include low-end restaurants, low-end clothing stores, discount shops of every description, used clothing and household furnishing stores, and businesses that cater to local, inexpensive travel. So if you own a business in the discretionary spending sector, you might want to give some very serious thought to selling your business now. Or in the next couple of years, depending on what you sell and to whom you sell it, you may be able to survive. But only the most clever, well-placed, or well-positioned, or just plain lucky businesses in this sector are going to truly thrive in this coming bubble quake. And if you're currently employed in the discretionary spending sector, and if you're in a position to remain for another, or retrain rather, for another career, now might be a very good time for you to start looking elsewhere, such as the necessities sector. So let's say that you're a steward or you're working on a Carnival Cruise Line. Heck of a good job. I have a student that's a Carnival Cruise Line. He used to work for the Carnival Line. And he used to work on these luxury ships all of his career. He's a merchant mariner. And he was a waiter or a purser. I guess they called him a purser. And he retired from it, and he enjoyed it and had a great time. Wealthy people will still be taking those cruises. And if you look at National Geographic magazine, during the period of 1930 through 1940, my God, the ads in National Geographic for the cruise ships and cruise lines cruising all over the world. Rich people, wealthy people will continue on doing that. Now, when you get down here to the budget cruisers like Carnival Cruise, you know, the little guys like us that spend $1,000 or $2,000 for a, you know, a 3 or 4 day trip or a week or 2 week trip, you know, through the Panama Canal, you can forget those. Us little guys down here that today can stretch and squeeze one of these inexpensive budget cruises for a week on the Love Boat, for instance, you know, are going to dry up. You can forget those. Concentrate on something that's more intelligent. Now listen to this. Here's some good news. You can cash in on the necessities sector, and that's going to include healthcare, food, basic clothing, transportation, education, and government services. So here's something that may help dry your tears. There's still some money to be made in the third area of the U.S. economy, called the necessities sector, as well as some huge potential profits in another unexpected growth area that we're going to tell you about in a minute. So I'm going to pause right here and let me show you what necessities are. If you've got an apartment building, and this is 1970 or 72 or 74, let's just picture you got an apartment building. You've got a vacancy factor, and probably your vacancy factor is going to be a little higher than normal. You've got a mortgage to service. You've got bills to pay, and you've got tenants in your building that you've got to satisfy and keep happy so that they'll stay there and keep paying the rent. But those tenants have needs, and so let's suppose that the toilet tank leaks or that the right front burner on the electric stove burned out or the oven thermostat went haywire and it doesn't work, and these people call you, the owner or the manager of the apartment building, and they say, hey, listen, come fix my stove. Hey, listen, come fix my toilet. Hey, my drain is plugged up or it's running slow. Come fix it. And so you're a businessman now running this apartment house, and you have an expense. You have to call plumbers and carpenters and electricians to come make these repairs. So in the late 1960s and throughout the 1970s, I operated a company called the Gordon Building Maintenance Company. And I fit right into that repair niche in the apartment industry. And I charged half price. Now you're an apartment house owner or you're a manager and you've got a plugged up drain. Who do you want to call? Gordon Building Maintenance at $12 an hour or Jake's Plumbing Company or Roto-Rooter at $25 an hour? Now, it doesn't take you very long to figure out that repairs are the companies that make the money during hard times, and the 70s were hard times, and my business thrived. I made money hand over fist. My business was growing month in and month out. So this guy, in his book, giving you these ideas, I can come in and say, yeah, that's exactly right, because that's where I was in the 70s. You know, I never got into new construction, and I observed that the guys that were in new construction were on the sidelines wondering, what in the hell am I going to do next? Now, the necessity sector of the economy, which is composed primarily of healthcare, education, and government services, primarily run by government or other nonprofit entities, you know, like Salvation Army or the Red Cross, and they don't pay very well. However, the private companies that supply these government and nonprofit entities have the potential to do very well during the coming bubble quake. So let's suppose that you work for a company that makes medical supplies. Here in Baxter County, Arkansas, there is a company down here that makes bandages and catheters and all kinds of supplies that are needed in the healthcare industry. Those workers and those kinds of companies will continue right on. Sick people will spend money on their healthcare long before they're going to take a Carnival cruise. You know, if a guy has to choose between his three times a week dialysis routine and spending money on a new car, he's going to take the dialysis every time and to hell with the new car. He'll make do with the old car, but the old car breaks, and so he now needs repairs. So the guy that positions himself in auto repair or appliance repair or home repair, repairing anything, is going to be a guy that's positioned himself for tough times. And if you want to, you know, get after it. There's going to be some buyers out there that are going to buy Gucci and Jordache and Rolls-Royce automobiles. You'll notice that Rolls-Royce survived the Great Depression, and Studebaker and Packard and Willys and a lot of other companies, you know, survived the Great Depression and then made money during World War II. And then after World War II, those brand names disappeared. But a lot of companies survived the Great Depression. Always remember that. And while thousands of companies were going under in the Great Depression, there were a few companies that were actually making it, surviving it, and some even thrived during it. And that's what we're aiming at here. And that's why I think this book is well worth the money, because it's how to thrive and survive during the coming bubble quake. Now, businesses and business winners and losers in the necessity sector. Healthcare is currently a very strong element of the U.S. economy, and it's going to continue to be the best bet in the necessity sector after the bubbles pop, but not without some pain. Many people are going to lose their private medical insurance as they lose their jobs, which will initially cut into healthcare profits. The government will step in and then fill the gap with Medicaid and Medicare, but benefits will be tight. And with more and more aging baby boomers needing more and more healthcare, even when funding of benefits per capita goes down, the overall demand for healthcare is going to continue to rise. You'll have more and more people demanding more and more healthcare. And they're going to spend the money on healthcare before they spend their money on a new car. Bottom line. The loss of so many privately insured people will also cause some big losses for the healthcare industry, particularly in the areas of capital goods, such as x-ray machines and CAT scans and scanners and hospital construction. However, businesses that are providing services and supplies to the healthcare industry will continue to do all right. Another survivor will be most government services, with some notable exceptions. Surprisingly, government spending on the defense industry will take a very deep cut. It won't be because people all of a sudden don't care about defense, but when push comes to shove, the Americans have to, and when Americans have to choose between bombs and Band-Aids, they'll reluctantly cut the Defense Department before pulling the plug on Medicare and Medicaid. And funding per capita on Medicare and Medicaid expenditures will decline. But before they make massive benefit cuts, we suspect that they'll drastically cut defense spending first. So if you're in the defense industry, traditionally, at least since World War II, defense industries have been immune from any layoffs or any problems. I think that this coming bubble quake is going to be a little different. Yeah, there'll still be defense industries. You can count on that. And yeah, you're going to do all right. But there's going to be cutdowns because it's a capital good. Now, during the last Depression, back in the 1930s, policemen, if you could hang on to your job as a policeman or a fireman, or you're out here, you're the guy working with the road gang at the county level, and you're running the snowplow, or you're filling potholes, you know, all those jobs are necessary. They're needed. Government expenditures, you know, like welfare and food stamps and things that are, you know, nice things to have, but we can do without. Now, if you got people that are necessary, then they'll keep them. Policemen are necessary. Firemen are necessary. We might not need as many policemen, and we may not need as many firemen, but, you know, police and fire services are going to continue. All of your public offices, you know, if you're a public office holder, you're the county commissioner, you're the sheriff, you're a sheriff's deputy. The sheriff's department might not need 35 deputies, but they're still going to need 15 or 20. And that's just where reality is at. So while there will be cutbacks, and while there will be cutbacks in your pay scale, in other words, you might be making $20 an hour today as a deputy sheriff, and you might go down to $10 an hour, but at least you'll be employed, and at least you'll be making 10 bucks an hour. And that's going to be a whole lot more than the average Joe Sixpack. And remember that depressions also have depressed prices. Our problem today is that we're faced with one hyperinflation, number one. And then when they rein in the hyperinflation, you have depression that follows it. So you're going to have runaway prices, which will then be throttled. We'll have some kind of a new currency exchange like they did in Russia and down in Argentina. And there'll be massive dislocations. And then stability comes out of all that chaos at some point in time down the road. And then when this new money hits the marketplace, and when this new economy comes around, and new government programs come around. And you know, the Great Depression was tough, but it came to an end, didn't it? The same thing is true here. But there's great opportunity. That's the point that this author is making. No one's going to like that decision, but the days when our government could simply borrow all the money that they needed to buy everything that they wanted is going to come to an end. Deficit spending at this point is no longer an option, and it will come to an end. Paying down the deficit primarily through massive inflation will be forced on the government at the same time that it will be struggling to make ends meet because of a huge reduction in tax revenue. And let's not forget that the government won't be able to borrow money from Social Security taxes anymore because the surplus will be entirely gone. And currently, Social Security taxes fund more than a third of our budget deficits, and take that away, and we're going to have some huge government cuts in every area, with defense spending being near the top of the list. All right, let's think about this now for a second. I'll put my arrow right here in the margin. You're going to have some budget cuts. Budget cuts, why is that? Well, bankruptcy implies that you're unable to pay your bills. So when the American government gets to the point that we can't pay this massive balance of payments deficit that's pushing up toward $1 trillion a year, and this massive federal budget deficit, which is really more like 0.75 trillion than the $200 billion that they're telling you about, and then we have to cut back. And so we'll cut back on the spending, and we will accelerate the printing of money to pay off those debts on bonds, Social Security. The government will pay their debts. They will just print it up and send out the checks. And you're going to have massive inflation and massive price increases, but you're going to be paid in full with money that won't buy anything. That's the way governments work. That's the way it's always worked in the past. You can bank on the United States government. It's what we did in 1783. It's what we did in 1933. It's what we're going to do when this one hits. They'll print the money up and they'll spend it. As a result of that, when the massive hyperinflation reaches its pinnacle and the government has satisfied all of you bondholders, and you're sitting there now with dollars for your bonds, dollars that don't buy anything. Now we get to the point where we have to have a new colored money. And so the government will come out and they'll come up with a new economic plan. That's what they did after the German inflation in 1923. That's what we did after the continental currency collapsed in 1783. We went to the Constitutional Convention and we came up with a constitution and new money with gold backing. in 1787, and we started the game over again. That's what we did in 1933. President Roosevelt called in the gold at $20.67 an ounce. Then when he got his hands on all the gold and put it in Fort Knox, he revalued it at $35 an ounce. So the government made a 60% profit on your loss. Then he gave us a new colored money, a new size of money, and we started the game over. The Great Depression of the 1930s was, in effect, the bankruptcy of the United States. And that's the way nations go bankrupt, by defaulting on their payments. How do you like that for a plan? So let me remind you again that this is the book called America's Bubble Economy, a book written and aimed at blue-collar people, guys like you and me, the waitresses and small business people. Start thinking about positioning yourself and protecting yourself from the coming economic collapse. That's where reality's at. And not only can you protect yourself, you can actually, if you position yourself correctly, thrive in addition to survive. Remember, the book now is called America's Bubble Economy, David Wiedemeyer, or Wiedemeyer, Wiedemeyer, America's Bubble Economy. Get it at Barnes & Noble, $25, published in 2006. Okay, remember Austin, Texas, February 26th through March the 2nd, tax school down there in Austin, Texas. If you would like to participate or want to get some more information, call us here at the law school at 417-273-4967. And if you have a source here on Indian Black Salve, give me a call, would you? I need another supplier, Indian Black Salve. All right, kids, we're just about out of time, so let me give you a final reminder that you have been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. If you'd like more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact disc. If you'd like more information, please go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station, God willing, of course. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.